Mitzvah Bikur Cholam is discussed in Shulchan Aruch, the very end of the third chelik Yerodeah. Yerodeah has three volumes. At the end of the third chelik, you have a whole section about Bikur Cholam, and then you have laws concerning doctors, how doctors are permitted and obligated to treat patients. Then you have the din of what happens if the doctor is not successful in treating the patient. The patient dies. You have the laws of ripping kriya, you have the laws of aninus, then you have the laws of kvura, and you have the laws of avelos. And Cherim, one is put in Cherim, has to observe Avelos for himself. So you have the laws of Cherim thrown in over here also. This last section of the Shulchan Aruch is all patterned after the Ramban Sefer Torah Sa'adim. Ramban himself was a doctor, and he wrote a whole Sefer about how to treat the human lives, starting from when the baby is born, how you have to treat the baby, what if the baby is born on Shabbos, what you're permitted to do on Shabbos, what you're obligated to do on Shabbos, and so on. Then when the person gets sick, how do you treat the sick people? And then the Bikur Cholam, and the whole Hilchos Avelos, everything. This section of Shulchan Aruch is patterned after the Ramban's Torah Sa'adim. Different sections of Shulchan Aruch have patterned after different Svarim written by different Rishonim. Like the beginning of the Yerodeah, the first Chelik is all patterned after the Rashbo's Torah Sabayis. And this section is patterned after the Ramban. Other sections are straight word from the Ramban. Patterned after and practically verbatim from the Ramban. The Gemara in the Dorim has the big discussion. The big sugya of Bikur Cholam is a Maseches Nedarim. The Mishnais in the Dorim have situations where someone took a neder not to get Hanor from somebody else. Another takes a neder not to give Hanor to somebody else. What's the din if someone is sick and I want to be Mevaker Chayla, but I took a neder not to give him Hanor, or he took a neder not to get Hanor from me, am I permitted or obligated to go be Mevaker Chayla? So the Gemara has the whole discussion of Bikur Cholam there in Nedarim Daf Mem. So the Gemara says that one should not be Mevaker Chayla in the first 3 hours of the day. We assume the day is from 6 in the morning to 6 in the evening. If you assume the sun rises approximately at 6 and sets at 6, if you have a day when you have the equinox, so the Gemara says it's not a good idea to visit, to be Mevaker Cholam the first 3 hours of the day or the last 3 hours of the day. Why? Because in the first 3 hours of the day, the sick person probably had a good night's sleep, so he's going to look very healthy in the morning. And if you'll go be Mevaker Cholam, he probably will not offer a prayer. And it's not a good idea to visit the Cholam the last 3 hours of the day because it looks so bad, it looks like he's half dead. And you also won't offer a prayer because it looks like he's a goner. So you only left with the middle 6 hours of the day to be Mevaker Cholam. The Gemara says on the same daf that Bikur Cholam is ain lo shir, ela dvarim she'ein lahem shir. So Bikur Cholam is one of them. And the Gemara says you should even be Mevaker Cholam 100 times a day. So there's a famous story about Rabbi Elbala Soloveitchik that he wasn't feeling well. Somebody came to be Mevaker Cholam, the fellow was a nudnik. And he didn't leave. So Rabbi Elbala kept on giving him one hint and another hint and another hint. The guy should leave already. He didn't take any hint. So then he finally said he always wondered, what is the minimum shir for Bikur Cholam? How long do you have to wait? So he thought, based on this Gemara, that you see, you shouldn't visit the Cholam the first 3 hours, you shouldn't visit the last 3 hours. You only left with the middle 6 hours of the day. So, and the Gemara says you can visit 100 times a day. So 100 times a day, you only have 6 hours. So what's the shir? So 6 times, every hour has 60 minutes. So 6 times 60 is 360 minutes. So if you divide that by 100, so you're left by 3.6. You see that the minimum shir for Bikur Cholam is 3.5 minutes. So the guy finally took the hint and he left. So what is the big concern? The person will be Mevaker Cholam the first 3 hours, last 3 hours, he won't ever offer a prayer. So he won't offer a prayer. So the patient will survive without his prayer. So the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch and Shin Lamed Hei quotes the Ramban in his commentary on that Gemara in the Dorim. It would appear from that Gemara that if you visit the Cholam, you don't offer a prayer, you're not yet to the mitzvah of Bikur Cholam. Why? Because you haven't done the maximum that's in your power to help him get better. If you don't offer a prayer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we believe that the doctors are not always successful on their own to heal the patient. We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Rofei Kol Basar Mafli Lasos. God is the one who has the power ultimately to heal the sick. And we have to offer a prayer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should heal the sick patient. And the mitzvah of Bikur Cholam isn't really to visit. The mitzvah of Bikur Cholam is to heal the patient. The Gemara on that daf tells the story of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva had so many thousands of students. Apparently he took attendance. So one day he noticed one of the students wasn't there. So he asked, where's the student? So he told me he's sick in the dormitory. He went to the dormitory room. So he said, of course he's sick. The room was dusty and dirty. So he opened the window, he got fresh air, and he cleaned the floor. Or the Mepharshim said he got somebody else to clean the floor, whatever. Somebody cleaned the floor, and they changed the sheet, and they changed the guy's pajamas, and then he got better. So the Gemara says, that's the way to fulfill the mitzvah. Bikacholim is really the mitzvah for the doctors and for the nurses, to help the person get better. So even the doctors with the nurses who are experts, if they don't offer a prayer, so they're not, I'd say, fully the mitzvah bikacholim. The mitzvah means to do the maximum that's in your power to heal the patient. Today, Bizman HaZeh, that if someone is sick, so he sees a doctor, and the doctor prescribes a medication, and the nurse is taking care of him, if he's in the hospital, whatever, or his relatives are taking care of him at home, or his roommate is taking care of him. So what's left for the bikachol, what's left for us to do? So we assume that if a person is in an upbeat mood, if he's planning to get better, if he's in a cheerful mood, so this will help in his recovery. If he's in a bad mood, so it'll take him longer to recover. So by cheering him up, if you come and you visit and you cheer him up in a reasonable fashion, so that will also help his recovery. So that's why today we call it bigachalim when you visit the sick. But the nature of the mitzvah is not really to visit the sick. The nature of the mitzvah really is to do the maximum that you have in your power to heal the sick people. The Rambam has such an idea. The Rambam lived in Egypt, as we all know. When he was grown up, he lived in Egypt. And the Jewish community in Tayman sent him a letter that there was some fellow who claimed to be the Melech HaMashiach. And they wanted to know, the Rambam should psychoanalyze him long distance without meeting him to determine whether he's really the Melech HaMashiach or he's a crackpot. So the Rambam psychoanalyzed him and says he's a crackpot. He says, I'm a shugana, he's crazy. And he's not the Melech HaMashiach. So the Rambam wrote the whole famous letter, Igeres Tayman, where he gives you the guidelines for how do we know, what are the simanim to know that this individual is the Melech HaMashiach. One of the simanim that's relevant is, he said, the Melech HaMashiach will be in his gala in Eretz Yisroel. It's a psukim in Tanakh like that. Eretz HaTzvi, it says. And it'll be an unknown figure. He will become, he will appear. His appearance will take place in Eretz Yisrael, not in Tayman. So he says he's not in the running. Your candidate's not in the running. And then he says the Melech HaMashiach is going to encourage people to do mitzvahs, not to do averis. And this fellow is encouraging the people to give away all of their money to charity. The Rambam says that's against our law. You're not permitted to give away all of your money, even to the Beis HaMikdash. That's a pasuk in Chumash, the end of Chumash Vayikra. Let alone to charity. For sure you're not allowed to give away all of your money. So he said, this guy is not in the running, he's not in Eretz Yisrael, and he's encouraging the people to go against the halacha. So it's clearly not the Melech HaMashiach. Much of what the Rambam writes in the Geres Tayman appears in the Rambam in the end of the Mishnah Torah. The last few chapters in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam, last three, four chapters, talks about the coming of Mashiach. There's no contradictions between what he writes. There's a lot of overlap. And then there's a lot of things that he writes in the Geres Tayman that he doesn't write in the Mishnah Torah, and there's some things in the Mishnah Torah that he didn't write in the Geres Tayman. You have to put it all together. So one of the things that the Rambam writes in the Geres Tayman is the famous line, we all have an obligation to hasten the coming of Mashiach. What do I have Mashiach in my hand? I have him in my pocket. I don't control the situation. What can I do to hasten the coming of Mashiach? So the Rambam says, well, the Ribbono Shel Olam has it in his control, so we all have an obligation to pray, to daven every day to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he should hasten the coming of Mashiach. That's why we recite one of the brachas in the middle of the Shemon Esri is Estemach Tovet Avdecha Me'eres Hatzmiach. Please see to it that you hasten the coming of Mashiach. So similar to that Rambam, that the Rambam says we have an obligation to take care of something that's not power. So how can we fulfill the obligation? So he says by davening, so too over here, we have an obligation to heal the sick. So how can you fulfill that obligation if we assume that the doctors will not necessarily, even if he's the best doctor in the world, without praying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, without God's intervention, the sick patient is not necessarily going to get better. So therefore, the Ramah quotes this Ramban on the Doram Daf Mem. He says that you're obligated to do the maximum you can do to heal the patient. So that means you're obligated to daven. If you visit the chole, if you treat him and you don't offer a prayer, you're not fully yet to the mitzvah of bikur chole.
Do you have a specific idea of what offering prayer means? Is it saying to heal him? Is it just saying, unfortunately, you should get better?
you're not mechuyev to daven for an hour, but a little bit, yeah. Say Tehillim is a nice idea. Torah from Mishaberach is questionable. They often do it. They say Mishaberach and they say a tefillah for a chayla. That's questionable. The Netziv, in his commentary on the Shiltas, the Netziv is the Rosh Yeshiva Malozhin. Malozhin was a big yeshiva that was founded in Poland in 1801 or so, and it lasted for 90 years till 1891. It was closed by the Russian government. So the last 39 years, the Netziv was the Rosh Yeshiva. That's a very long time. So the Netziv, when he was a teenager, when he was still a student in the yeshiva, wrote a running commentary on the Shiltas. A fascinating idea. Hardly anybody ever looks in the Shiltas. So he and his brother-in-law also wrote commentaries on the Shiltas. His brother-in-law was Dorach HaShulchan. They both wrote commentaries on the Shiltas at the same time. Dorach HaShulchan's commentary was not printed, and his was printed. So the... So the Netziv has a fantastic kiddush based on a comment of the Shiltas. He thinks one is not permitted to offer prayer whenever he wants. He can only offer a prayer in the context of a Shmon Esri. So if you daven Shmon Esri, you can add on a prayer in the middle of Refa'enu to heal a sick person, or in the middle of Shema Koleinu, you can offer a prayer. Or at the end of the Shmon Esri, or you can always recite Pirkei Tehillim. But just, let's say, what they usually do is they recite a Pirkei Tehillim, then they say Mishaberach for the Chayla. So according to Netziv, that's not permissible. According to Netziv's interpretation of the Shiltas, that's not permissible. It's based on the pasuk v'dibarta bom v'loy b'tfilo. The pasuk says v'dibarta bom, and the Gemara is medayek. The Gemara in Yuma daf yotes medayek v'loy b'tfilo. So what does it mean? So the Netziv understood the Shiltas as interpreting that Gemara v'dibarta bom. You can talk and learning all you want, all day long. You can talk and learning. But you're not allowed to daven whenever you please. You're only allowed to daven, you need a heter to daven. You're only permitted to daven, offer prayers in the context of the Shmon Esrei as the Chachamim Institute. Outside of the context of the Shmon Esrei, it's also to offer prayers. So this is the mitzvah, this is the nature of the mitzvah, Bikur Cholim, to heal the patient. What exactly is the source of this mitzvah? It's a biblical mitzvah, rabbinical mitzvah. So the Pashtus says it certainly is a biblical mitzvah. The Ramban writes in one place on the Gemara in Bava Metzia that all we have three kinds of mitzvahs. We have a mitzvah bein adam lamakom. We have a mitzvah to observe Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras HaMishpacha. That's bein adam lamakom. Then we have mitzvah shebein adam lachavero. We have a mitzvah to deal how to deal with other people in a decent fashion. Then we have a third category of mitzvahs. That's what the Vilna Gaon points out. People usually think there are only two categories of mitzvahs. This is an obligation, a mitzvah should be an adam liatzmo. A person has an obligation to preserve his tzelem alakim. Mitzvah to have midas toivah. So the Ramban writes in one place on the Gemara, interpreting a Gemara in Bava Metzia, that the source for all of the mitzvah should be an adam lachavero is the pasuk that you have to l'racha kamoicha. You have to take care of other people's needs as if they would have been your own needs. Just like a person is interested in taking care of his own needs, so he has an obligation to take care of everybody else's needs as well. So that mitzvah, v'ahavta l'reacha kamoicha, is a mitzvah that's based on reciprocity. I'm obligated to take care of your needs because you're obligated to take care of my needs. If someone is poor, I have an obligation to help him because when I will be poor, or I'm a multi-billionaire, so it means my children or my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren will be poor, so you or your children or your great-grandchildren will be obligated to help me out. That's what it says in the pasuk. It says, Pesach tiptach is yotcha, you should give tzedakah to the poor, ki lo yechdal evyam mikerev haaretz, because poverty will never be eliminated from the world. There will always be a problem of poverty. That's why God commands us to give charity to the poor, because poverty will never be eradicated. So the pasuk is very difficult. That's the reason why you're obligated to give charity. That's what sociologists argue, that should be the reason that there's no obligation to give charity. You're never going to solve the problem of poverty anyway. The nature of society is such that there's always going to be somebody who's going to be poor. So what are you wasting your time to try to help out the poor? Either they're going to be poor or someone else is going to be poor. So don't waste your time. It's like there's a dam holding back the water from causing a flood. And then there's a hole in the dam, so I put my hand over there to block the water from coming. Then another hole develops, so I put my hand over here. Then there's a third hole. I only have two hands. What am I keep on standing there? The water's going to come anyway. So what am I? It's an act of futility. I'm not going to prevent the flood from coming anyways. So the pasuk doesn't read straight. You're obligated to give charity to the poor because kilo yachdalev yemikarev hearts. I kind of nechem mitzab chalasos asador hazeh. So the Abar Banel in his commentary on that pasuk in Chumash Devarim explains what the pasuk means to teach us is that the obligation to give tzedakah and the obligation to fulfill all the mitzvahs shemiran b'chaveiro is based on the principle of reciprocity. I'm mechuyev to give to other people because they're mechuyev to do back to me. What do you mean? I'm mechuyev to give to the poor, but I'm a multi-billionaire. Huh? I'm never going to need help from him. So the answer is not kilo yechdalev yemikarev hearts. That anius, the Gemara comments on that pasuk, poverty is a galgal hachoyze ba'olam. Even if I'm a multi-billionaire, sometime in the future my descendants will need help. They'll need charity. Ashiris never goes li'olam void in the same family. So I'm obligated to give to others. I'm obligated to help other people out when they need help because they're obligated to return, to do this in return to me. All the mitzvahs should be done are based on this principle of reciprocity. That's why we assume that min ha-Torah, the obligation to fulfill mitzvah shemiran lachaver, only applies to fellow Jews, and to non-Jews we're not obligated to do any of these acts of tzedakah and gmilus chasad and min ha-Torah, because they're not obligated to return it back to us. So the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, strictly speaking, is a mitzvah shebiran machadero. So biblically, we should say one is not obligated to be mevakeh cholim by non-Jews. The Gemara says, "Midirabbanan the Chachamim required you should be mevakeh cholim nachrim ipnei darki shalom." It's a good thing to do. But other Rishonim point out that not only is the mitzvah Bikur Cholim a mitzvah shebiran machadero, where reciprocity is the point of starting point. All the mitzvahs shemiran lachaveira are based on the obligation of reciprocity. It's also a mitzvah shebinodam liatzmo. You have the pasuk in Chumash that tells us v'halachta b'drachov. We're supposed to go in the ways of God. What do you mean go? We should imitate God. That's how the Rambam says, to imitate God. Why should we imitate God? A little child sometimes imitates, a little girl imitates the mommy. So she puts on high heels and she puts on a big bonnet and she screams at the younger children. She gives them pets. She thinks that's what a mommy does. Mommy screams. Mommy wears a big hat, and mommy wears a shape, or whatever. Mommy wears high heels, or whatever. Or a little boy imitates a doctor. Someday he may become a doctor. So the girl, little girl will probably become a mother someday. So it makes sense to imitate. They're acting already now as if they're going to be in the future. Why do we have a mitzvah to imitate the ways of God? Why he's thinking of retiring? And they're looking for a mamale mokam. Why should we imitate the ways of God? So the answer is no, because God created us, b'tzelem elokim. And he commanded us to go in his ways, to preserve the midos of Elokus that were implanted within us at birth. That's how the next pasuk reads in Parshas Kisava, v'halachta b'drachov, we should go in the ways of God, preserve the tzelem elokim. So then the very next pasuk reads, v'ro kolami ha'aretz, and all the nations of the world will see, kishem Hashem nikro alecho, that you have succeeded in preserving your tzelem elokim. The Yoru Mimeko, they will learn from you to act in a way of Yerushamayim. The non-Jews were also created the Tzelem Alekim. They can also preserve their Tzelem Alekim. They weren't commanded to, but they can do it. So we should act in such a way, V'halachta v'drachav, to preserve our Tzelem Alekim. And this, we should serve as an Or Lagoyim, as a light that's at Novi and Yeshaya says like that. But it's really based on this pasuk in Chumash. V'ro kalami ha'aretz, if the Jews will act in a very decent fashion, and succeed in preserving their Tzelem Elokim, so all the nations of the world will see, Ro Kalami Hortz Kishem Hashem Nikro Alecha, that we have succeeded in preserving our Tzelem Elokim, so they'll learn from us, they can do the same as well. So we have this obligation to preserve the Tzelem Elokim, always to act, to preserve the Midas of Elokus, always to act in the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu acts. So the way to fulfill that mitzvah is by studying Tanakh. You have to study Tanakh and to see how the prophets describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu's activities. The Rambam writes like that in the Mishnah Torah as well as in the Moreh Nevuchim. He says the whole Tanakh describes the way God does things in order to teach us how to fulfill this mitzvah of Halachta B'drachov. So the Pasuk tells us in Bereishis, in Parshas Vayera, Vayera Hashem Be'elon Amamre, the end of Lech Lucha, it says Avraham Avinu observed the mitzvah Bris Milah. And then on the Shmini Lemilosa, on the third day after the Bris Milah, he was very weak. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him. And usually when it says that God appeared to Avram, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, to Moshe Rabbeinu, to somebody, God appeared and he told them something. He gave him a message. Here it says God appeared and nothing happened. So what did he appear for? So Rashi quotes in the Medrash, he appeared just to be Mevaker Chaylim. So you see that this is one of the midas of HaKadosh Baruch. HaKadosh Baruch is Mevaker Chaylim. That's why he visited Avraham Avinu, no message is written. It's not significant. The message just is, he helped him get better. He cured him. So we have an obligation to imitate the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we have to be Mevaker Chaylim as well. So mitzad, the Rishonim say, so mitzad, this mitzvah of Halachta B'drachov, so we have an obligation to be Mevaker Chaylim by non-Jews, even in our Torah. It's not only Midirabban. The Gemara says that the obligation to be Mevaker Chaylim by Nochrim is only Midirabban, and that's mitzad, the mitzvah should be in Adam Mechaber. The same is true the Rambam writes regarding tzedakah. There is an obligation to give tzedakah to the poor because they're obligated to return back in the future, sometime in the future. If I and my descendants will be in need, so they have an obligation to act in a fashion of reciprocity to give to me or to help my children out when they'll be in need. So to give to a non-Jew, and the non-Jew is not obligated to reciprocate. He's not obligated to give back. So the Gemara says giving charity to the non-Jewish poor is only with the Rabbonim of Nei Dark and Shalom. But then the Rambam writes, yeah, that's mitzvah, the mitzvah of Benodim Lachavero. But then there's a third inyan, tzedakah, is one of the meters of HaKadosh Baruch. HaKadosh Baruch is a Bal Tzedakah, Bal Chesed. So we have to go B'Halach D'Bedroch, to go in the ways of God. So the Rambam says, V'Racham Abal Kol Mas, HaKadosh Baruch has Rachmanis on all the animals. And then, not only on the Jews, he has Rachmanis on the Behemoths and the Chayas as well. So we have to act decently to the non-Jews. We have to give Tzedakah to the Aniyei Nochrim on the level of the Raisa also. Because of this aspect of the mitzvah of Ben Adam Liatzma, the mitzvah of... the mitzvah of Halachta B'drachav. There is a big dispute in Shulchan Aruch. It's in the middle of Hilchos Shabbos. Middle of Hilchos Shabbos, you have two simanim, Shin Chav Ches and Shin Chav Tes, about how to deal with sick people on Shabbos. Chodesh Yesh B'Sakon, Chodesh Shem B'Sakon, Abari with a Mechesh B'Alma, different dinim. So the Mishnah Brura quotes a discussion there. It's really from the very end of Choshen Mishpat. So the Mishnah Brura wrote a sefer on Aruch HaYom. He didn't write on Choshen Mishpat. So he quotes this discussion in the middle of Hilchos Shabbos, in the middle of the laws of dealing with the sick. Is there an obligation to let's say a doctor has an obligation to be Mevaker Chaylim to heal the sick, and the doctor has to offer a prayer that his medical treatment should help, that the patient should get better. So is there an obligation to treat the patient who has a contagious disease, and I may catch his sickness? So if he is besafik sakana, and I'll put myself in safik sakana, that stam doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense. Why should I put myself into safik sakana? He's also in safik sakana. The question, what if he's bevadai sakana? He's in a vada sakana. If we don't deal with him, if we don't treat him, he's vada going to die. And if I'll be careful, I probably will not catch the disease from him. I'll take all the precautions, and I'll maybe yeah, maybe no, and probably no. It's a 50-50, or less than 50-50 chance. So that's a big dispute. If he's an avadai sakana, am I obligated, permitted, or forbidden to put myself into a suffix sakana in order to treat him? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the three opinions. Some hold that it's prohibited. Also to put yourself into a suffix sakana in order to heal someone from a vada sakana. Others say it's permissible but not obligatory. And the third opinion is that it's obligatory. That's what they quote from the Yerushalmi. The Hagos Maimini on the bottom of the Rambam in Hilchos Ratzeach Shmiras Nefesh quotes a passage from the Yerushalmi. We don't have this Yerushalmi, so we don't know exactly what he's quoting. Every so often the Rishonim quote things from the Talmud Yerushalmi which we simply don't have. So a lot of times they called Midrashim Yerushalmi, are they called the Tshuvas Hagoyim Yerushalmi? So we're not sure exactly what the Hagoyim Maimon is talking about.
Like firefighters or something.
That's the question. Is it permissible to serve as a firefighter? If the other fellow is Bevadai Sakana, if the other people are not Bevadai Sakana, it depends how much, I mean, they're trained. The firefighters are trained to protect themselves. So it's less than a 50-50 chance that they're going to get killed, that they're going to lose their lives. So the question is, what if there's a very risky situation? Someone's life is vada in danger unless the firefighter runs in. And And he knows that his life is b'safik sakana. He knows based on everything that he studied, he knows that he's putting his life b'safik sakana. So that's the machlokes. So many Rav Soloveitchik used to say that his grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, passed on one is obligated. One is obligated to put himself in a safek sakana. Like this passage from the Talmud Yerushalmi that we don't know exactly where this Yerushalmi is, that one is obligated to put himself into a vaday sakana, into a safek sakana to save someone else's life from a vaday sakana. In Europe, they used to have, the shaila was when there was a cholera epidemic. So if you don't treat the patient, the people were fainting all over and they were dying away. So if you don't help them out, they're vada going to die. And if you'll be careful, you won't the disease will not be communicated to you. But there is a chance that you will get you will catch the disease. So Prime is of the opinion that you're obligated. So he encouraged all the balabatim when there was such an epidemic. He himself helped treat the patients, and other people did. He survived, and some of the other people did die. But his opinion was that it's obligatory. The Gemara in the Dorim on Daf Mem, when the Gemara talks about praying for the sick patient that he should get better, so the Gemara has some kind of a funny expression there about davening that he should survive or die. What do you mean, davening that he should die? Who's going to daven that the patient should die? You pray that the patient should survive. So there's a long Maseches Nedarim. The common practice is we don't study the Rashi. The Rashi that's printed in the middle of the page, in the standard Gemara, was not written by Rashi. It was written by someone else, and there are many errors there. And the Tosfos is also weak. So we just read the Ran. You just read the Gemara with the Ran. A lot of people don't even read the Gemara. Just read the Ran. The Ran quotes the Gemara, and he tells you what Rashi said, not the pseudo Rashi. He tells what the real Rashi said, what the real Tosfos said, and what the Rambam says, and what the Ramban says. So you just read the Ran. The Ran gives you the whole story. So the Ran has a famous comment on Daf Mem in the Dorm, which is quoted in the end of Yeridaya, that the Gemara has this expression about davening that the patient should get better, that the patient should die. So he says, yes, that sometimes there's a mitzvah to pray that the patient should die. He says that based on that expression in the Gemara, when the patient is sick and the case is hopeless and he's just suffering, so what does he have to suffer long as he's not allowed to kill him? We don't permit mercy killing. That's based on a pasuk in Parshas Noach. It says in the Chumash that Shofech dam ha'odem v'odem dam yishofech. So the pasuk says, I forgot the whole pasuk. It says Ish Achiv, when a person kills his brother. And what if I kill my cousin? What if I'm not killing my brother? So Ish Achiv means your friend. So the pasuk sounds like it's talking about someone killing someone else with whom he's friendly. So why is he killing him? The answer is it's a mercy killing. That's what the Ksava Kabbalah writes on that pasuk. Ksava Kabbalah was written by a student of Rabbi Kivege. He was a rabbi in Germany. So he has that interpretation on the pasuk, and we assume that that is the source for the prohibition of mercy killing. So you're not allowed to kill someone to alleviate his pain, but there's no mitzvah to extend his life if the person is suffering and the doctors cannot heal him. And you know that the person would rather die than live. So in such a situation, there's no mitzvah to extend his life. And Adarabba, the Ran says, it's a mitzvah that you should pray that he should die earlier. So the Ran quotes another, he quotes this, he comments this passage in the Dorim Daf Mem, and then he has another passage in the end of Maseches Ksubis. The Gemara has a whole description, the day that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi passed away. That Gemara's famous is called Ashkafta the Rebbe. By Lubavitcher Hasidim, there's a sefer that was written when the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe died. So one of the Talmidim who was there happened to be later in life was a famous Rosh Yeshiva in Tarva Das, Rabbi Rifkin Zohan Lerach, he already passed away. So he wrote a whole description of the last days of the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe. That's called Ashkafta the Rebbe. So that expression, Ashkafta the Rebbe, is the title of the discussion, the end of Ksubis, where the Gemara discusses the last few days in the lifetime of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the one who edited the Mishnayos that we learned. So the Gemara says there that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was suffering and he had diarrhea or something, so he had to keep on. He wore tefillin all day long, so he took off his tefillin, had to go to the bathroom, and then he came out of there and put on a tefillin, then he had to go to the bathroom again, kept on putting on a tefillin, taking off the tefillin. He's so weak, we would have not put on tefillin at all. If you're so weak, you don't put on tefillin. So in the yeshiva, they were praying that he should get better. So the maid of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi sent a message to the yeshiva they should stop praying. And then there was a blacksmith in the neighborhood who kept on banging. He was making noise. So Rabbi Nasi was about to expire. And every time the blacksmith were banging, so he perked up again and he lived on again. And then the blacksmith kept on banging again, kept on keeping him alive. So she sent a message to the blacksmith, he should please stop banging for half an hour. And then she prayed that he should die. So her prayers were answered, and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi died. So the Gemara quotes the whole story. She arranged that he should die. She told the students not to pray that he should live. She prayed that he should die, and she had the blacksmith stop making the noise. She didn't go and choke him. She didn't do mercy killing that you're not allowed to do. But she prayed to the Baruch Shalom, and she took away all the things, Hasara Samanea. She took away the things that were preventing him from dying. And the Gemara does not condemn her from doing that. The Gemara tells the whole story. And it's recorded in the Gemara to imply that that's the right thing to do. So that's quoted in the end of Shulchan Aruch. That sometimes it's a mitzvah to pray that a person should die. And sometimes we say there's no mitzvah to extend a person's life. If it just doesn't make any sense, there's no mitzvah to extend.
How different is that from removing life support in the modern hospital?
No, if the person is on, let's say, oxygen, or the person is on intravenous, then you take it off. So the person dies from lack of nutrition, he dies from lack of oxygen. So that means that you killed him. But when you tell a blacksmith to stop making noise, so people don't die because it's quiet. People die because they have a sickness. When it's noisy, that keeps them alive. So when you stop the noise, then they die from the sickness. That's what Moshe Feinstein writes in his Sefer. Years ago, people used to think, if you pull the plug, so you're not touching the patient, you pull the plug out of the wall, or you turn the knob on the machine, so you didn't kill the patient. So Moshe Feinstein said, that's ridiculous. He died because of a lack of oxygen and because of a lack of nutrition. That's not called Hasaras Hamaneh. Hasaras Hamaneh is when you tell them to keep quiet, not to make noise. So noise, people don't die because it's quiet. People die because they have a sickness and they're weak. So this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that sometimes we would recommend that you should pray that somebody should die. There is a tshuva about Chaim Palagi, where a man was married and his wife was suffering terribly, and he asked the Rav whether he should pray that she should die. So he said, somebody should pray that she should die. It's not nice that the husband should pray. It looks as if he wants to bump off his wife. Ask the children to pray. Ask the neighbors to pray. You shouldn't pray that she should die. But in principle, that is the din. That's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that sometimes there is a mitzvah to pray that the patient should die. The Gemara has a tradition based on a pasuk in Novi, in Tehillim. Hashem yisodeini al eres devoy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help me when I'm sick in bed. So the Gemara understands from that pasuk that the Shechina is lemaila merashos of shel achayla. When a person is sick in bed, so we assume that the Shechina will be present. What is the significance of making this statement? So the Gemara has two dinim based on this. Number one, let's say that I come to be mevakeh chayla, I'm going to sit on such a chair, and the patient who's sick is laying on the floor. So the Shechina is above his head, and I'm sitting on a comfortable chair higher than the Shechina, so to speak. So the Gemara says that's not derech eretz, that you should sit higher than the Shechina, unless the patient is in a hospital on a higher bed. And I sit on a chair, it's usually lower, the bed is higher. So then there's no violation of derech eretz, that's what the Ramos says. If the patient is on a high bed and you're sitting on a chair, that's not a problem. But if the patient is lying on the floor and you're sitting on a chair that's higher, that's a violation of kavod Shechina. Then the Gemara has another difference based on this assumption that the Shechina is lemaila merashos of shel achayla. It's quoted here in Shin Lam Hei. They're both quoted in Shin Lam Hei. The other difference is, the Gemara says when a person prays Beloshon HaKodesh in Hebrew, so the prayers are accepted. The Gemara says like this. When a person prays, do the prayers go directly to God, or do you have to have the angels transmit the prayers? So the Gemara in Saita on Perek El in the Morim distinguishes. Morim Shabbos says it depends whether you're davening biyochid or davening b'tzibur. If a tzibur, a group of people, 10 people or more, are davening together, the prayers are so powerful they go directly to HaKadosh Baruch. You don't need the angels to present the prayers. If you have less than a minion, then you need the angels to present the prayers. So what's so bad? So the angels will present the prayers to HaKadosh Baruch. We don't pray to the angels, you're not allowed to. You pray to God, but the angels deliver the prayers. So the Gemara says, if you're davening biyochid, you shouldn't daven beloshen aramis in Aramaic, because the malachei hasharis eino makirim beloshen aramis. They don't recognize Aramaic. very strange, but all the other languages in the world you understand except for Aramaic. If you know all the other languages, you can't figure out Aramaic already. Tosfos doesn't understand, how can that be? So the Ravid in his Sefer, the Ravid who wrote the Hasagas on the Rambam, has also a collection of Shadas Atshuvas, many of them written by him, many written by those preceding him, that's called Sefer Tamim Deim. So in the Shadas Atshuvas of the Ravid and the Tamim Deim, he has a different interpretation. He says he doesn't think that it means Aramaic, Dafke. He says he thinks that it means the vernacular. And it doesn't mean that the angels don't understand Aramis. They mean, what it means is that the angels think that it's a prisas hakovet for a person to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the same language that he talks to his friends in the street. Like somebody once told me when he there was a balabas who was brought up in Hungary. So he tells me when the boys learned in the yeshiva, they would talk among themselves, they would talk Hungarian. They would talk to the people in the street that spoke Hungarian. But when they learned Gemara, they would learn in Yiddish. They wouldn't learn in Hungarian. The Shir was not in Hungarian, the Shir was in Yiddish. Yiddish is also not a Jewish language. It's not a holy, it's not the Lashon HaKodesh, but they felt it's a bizoyin to the Torah to talk and learning in the vernacular. In America, we do the same thing also. We don't talk and learning in Hebrew. We speak Yeshivish Hebrew. It's totally not, we speak Yeshivish English. It's not a real English. By the Catholics also. The Catholics changed their regulations. They always used to pray in Latin. And then many years ago they changed it. They said it's permissible to pray in English. And many of the Catholic worshippers complained that it doesn't have the same geschmack as it had. They never understood the Latin. And now that they understand what they're saying because they pray in English, they think that it takes away from the significance of the prayers. They would rather go back to Latin. They think that it cheapens the prayer service if you just pray in the same language that you speak, but if you speak in the vernacular. So that's how the Ravid interprets this Gemara. Not that Malachi HaShoas are not Makirim, they don't understand Lashon Aramis. If they know the other Shivim Lashon, the other 69 languages, how can they not understand Lashon Aramis? It's just a combination of Hebrew and a whole bunch of other languages. So he says, no, what it means is that the Malachi HaShoas think that it's not bekovedik to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Aramaic, in the vernacular. That's why they will choose not to deliver these prayers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it says in the Gemara, if you're praying for the well-being of the Chayla in the presence of the Chayla, then we assume that the Shechina is Lamayla Merashoy Sam Shalachar, the Shechina will be there. So even though you don't have a minion, you can pray in any language you want, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there directly. So you don't need the angels to deliver the prayer. But if you're praying for the Chayla Shalobach Ne'achar, the Chayla is in the hospital, the Chayla is at home, and I'm davening in Shul, or I'm davening somewhere else for the Chayla, so you're not praying in the presence of the Chayla. So if you have a minion, so the tefillos of a tzibur go directly to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you don't need the angels to deliver the prayers. But if you don't have a minion, and you're not praying b'fnei ha-chayla, then in Sadr Shulchan Aruch you should be careful to pray dafki b'loshen HaKodesh. You shouldn't pray in any vernacular because the malochim may not deliver the prayer. So the Taz points out that there are two different interpretations on that Gemara. Ein malachi ha-shoas makirim b'loshen Aramis. What does it mean? Some Rishonim say the Malachim only have it in against Aramaic. And others say it's not Aramaic, it means whatever is the vernacular. So here the Shulchan Aruch was machmir. Here the Shulchan Aruch says, whenever you're praying Shalom b'fnei achoyla and you don't have a minion, you should be careful dafke to pray b'loshon HaKodesh. They don't tell you just to avoid Aramaic. They say you shouldn't pray in any vernacular, to be choshish for this opinion of the writer, Nimdein, but that's the problem. When a person prays for the Chayla, the Shulchan Aruch and Shin Lamed Hei quotes from the Gemara in the first parak in Masechta Shabbos, where the Gemara says you should always ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to grant a refuah shleimah to so and so, the Soch Shar Chayla Yisrael. Instead of just praying for one specific Chayla, you should pray on behalf of the Rabbi. The Gemara has such a klal in brachas with respect to Tefillah Saderach. When I'm traveling on the road, so I'm obligated to recite a Tefillah, a prayer that I should have a safe trip. Shouldn't have any accidents, shouldn't bump into any hijackers, shouldn't bump into any wild animals on the way. So the Gemara says, rather than just pray, you should say in the pool, I am driving all by myself. No, but there are other people driving their cars. There are many other people traveling. So the best is to be koilol your tzara, your needs, together with everybody else. So the Gemara says the same is true regarding tefillah for the chayla. You should ask for the refuah for the chayla, b'soch shachayla Yisrael. What about being mevaka chayla on Shabbos? So the Gemara says being mevaka chayla menachem oval on Shabbos poses a problem. We have the pasuk in Yeshaya says that not only do we have to be careful not to do malach on Shabbos, we have the mitzvah of shama v'zachar. Shama means not to do malachas on Shabbos. Yeshaya Hanavi says there are a lot of other things included in Zohar. The Gemara says that Zohar means you have to recite Kiddush, but in addition to reciting Kiddush, the Navi Yeshaya says there's a din of kibud, there's a din of oinig, and there's a din memtzach hafatzecho v'daber dovi. You should be careful on Shabbos, shelo yehei diburcha shal Shabbos, ki diburcha shal chol. You're not allowed to speak on Shabbos the same way you speak on a weekday. So it means you're not allowed to talk about business. That's what Rashi says. You're not allowed to talk about business. Tosfos says, not allowed to talk about business. That's a davar pashut. That's memtzach hafatzecho. But daber dover is another thing. The pasuk in Yeshaya says you should be careful memtzach hafatzecho, not to engage in business, and daber dover not to speak direkol. What are direkol? So Tosfos says direkol means sicha b'teilum. A lot of people just chatter. You sit around the table and just talk about the weather and the latest current events and all kinds of silly things. So Tosfos claims that that's prohibited on Shabbos. That's the prohibition of daber dover. Shalai hey debuchah shal Shabbos. Debuchah shal chol means that sicha b'teilum is also on Shabbos. And the Gemara even says, what about to greet someone to say good Shabbos? That's an act of sicha b'teilum. So the Gemara has in the first paragraph of Masechta Shabbos, the Gemara has an expression, b'koishi hitiru shela shalom b'Shabbos. With great difficulty, the rabbi said, in order to bring about the shalom and avo nachva v'reya, so b'koishi they allowed to greet people on Shabbos, but it's really in a certain sense a violation of daber dover. It's really sicha b'teilum. You shouldn't give a long aricha, so how are you, and what's new, and what's the latest thing? That's not really allowed. You should just say good Shabbos briefly and call it quits. So the Gemara says in the first parak in Shabbos that, strictly speaking, there's nothing wrong with being mevaka chayla or menachem oval on Shabbos, but the problem is, when you've got to be mevaka chayla or menachem oval, so you're going to be talking about the details of the sickness, the details of the death of the one that they're sitting shiva for. But that's not right. So the Gemara says you have to be careful not to get involved, not to violate the din of daber dover, not to talk too much about the sickness, just briefly, on Shabbos or Yontif. And same thing by being Menachem Oval on Shabbos or Yontif. And even when you say, Hamokim Menachem Eschem, or you say on Shabbos you should have a Refuah Shleima, so you should add on a phrase, Shabbos Himilizuk, Refuah Kroiva Lova. It's not really right to talk about these things on Shabbos, but the Rebbe Shalom should give you a full shleim. He should say, Shabbos hima l'nachim. It's not really right to me menachem oval on Shabbos, but hamokim menachem eschem. A lot of people do that when they talk business. They're talking business, they want to sell a house, they say, in Yiddish they'll say, nishtem Shabbos geret. You're not allowed to talk about things on Shabbos, how much do you want for your car? The other guy says, nishtem Shabbos geret, he wants $20,000. He says, okay, nishtem Shabbos geret, it's a deal. So that you're not allowed to do, nishtem Shabbos geret. But the Gemara says this they allowed us to be mevaka chayla menachem oval and say hamokim menachem eschem. So you should add on Shabbos imelizik and Shabbos imelanachem. It's not really right. It says in Shulchan Aruch that when you say mishaberach for a chayla on Shabbos in shul, so it depends how sick the patient is. If he's really, really deathly sick, then you say mishaberach. Then you don't have to say Shabbos imelizik. If it's a suffix sakana, it's mamish hovering between life and death. So then you're allowed to say tefillah on Shabbos. You don't have to say this heter Shabbos imelizik refuah kroiva lova. If he's a chayla shema sakana, he's bedridden, but there's no suffix sakana. So then you add on when you say the mishbech, say Shabbos imelizik refuah kroiva lova. In Shulchan Aruch, the Ramok quotes from the Maharil that there's a mitzvah to be mevaka chayla even if you don't get along with the other person. There's still a mitzvah to be mevaka chayla. And then the Ramah thinks that we shouldn't follow that maril. That's the simple reading of the Gemara. The Gemara in the third perek in Moed Katan, perek Eile Megalchan, has all the laws of Avelus and all the laws of Cherem and Nidui. So the Gemara tells a story that there were two people who didn't like each other. And one of them was sick, so when the whole group of people went to be Mavakar Chayla, so the Sinai went as well. So the Maharil understands from that Gemara that even if you're a Sinai, you still got to be Mavakar Chayla. The Ramah thinks that it depends, that if the patient is going to think that he's coming to visit me because he's so happy, he's so excited that I'm going to die, that I'm sick and I'm suffering, so then it's not right. That it's not right to go visit. If you think the Sinai will appreciate your coming, so then there's an obligation to be Mevakar Chayla, even if you're a Sinai. Remember, every so often there's someone in the hospital in New York, and they want to know where the closest shul is. They want to walk to shul on Shabbos in order to daven. So we usually succeed in convincing them, sometimes we don't, that there's no need for them to daven b'tzibur. That the whole mila of davening b'tzibur is that when you daven b'yechidus, you need the angels to bring the prayers. When you daven b'tzibur, so ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu mo'is b'tfilos harabim. The Gemara learns that from a pasuk, hein kel kabir lo yimos, God is not mo'is b'tfilos harabim. So by the choyla, the Gemara learns that from the pasuk, that the shechina is l'mayla man ha'shosef shel ha'choyla, the shechina is there. So you already have the my love davening mitzibah with you. So there's no need for you to daven mitzibah. It doesn't help. He's not going to hear Kriyas HaTorah. Even though the Shechina is there, he's not going to hear Kriyas HaTorah. So, look, if it's within reason, the Chayla should go to the hospital. But usually the nurses will not let him go to the hospital. Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Gemara that sometimes there are sicknesses that the patient has to be careful not to exert himself. So if you're going to be Mevakar Chayla, you're going to be Matriach on him. So you're causing him an avlo. You're being Matriach him. So you're not supposed to be Mevakar Chayla in such a situation. Or the same thing, you talk on the telephone, you talk forever. That's also not right. It has to be with Seichel, not be too taxing on the Chayla. Just as a footnote to what we mentioned before, that the Ran in the Dorim and Daf Mem on that sugya b'kacholim says that sometimes there's a mitzvah to pray that the person should die. So and then he quotes the other passage from the Gemara in the end of Ksubas about Ashkafta the Rebbe when Rabbi Yehuda Anossi passed away. So the Amsa the Bei Rebbe prayed that he should die, and she had the Talmidim stop davening for a refuah for him, and so on. So the Shulchan Aruch has this later. The next siman is about doctors treating the patient. So the Ramah quotes it over there, that whole run. So sometimes this is very relevant for treating patients. Let's say a patient has a sickness and they're going to tell him that he needs chemotherapy. He needs chemotherapy, his hair is going to fall out and he won't be able to hear, whatever. He's going to lose this, or they're going to cut off his leg or something. The person is 95 years old already. He already saw his great-grandchildren. He had enough nachas. He's coming to the end. So he says, don't do me any favors. Let me die in peace. So a person has no right to take his own life. Suicide is prohibited. That's the pasuk in Parashas Noach. Achaz dimchav v'nav shesech medrosh. But still, a person is a balabas to determine whether he's doing him a favor or not. The whole obligation to heal the sick, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, is based on the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. If the fellow dropped a nickel, or he dropped a balloon, so you have an obligation to return his aveda that's worth a nickel or worth a dollar, they certainly have an obligation. Hashavas Gufo, like Olshkein, Hashavas Gufo is a kavachimer from Hashavas Mamono. So Hashavas Aveda also, let's say the person tells me he doesn't want this. He has a lot of stuff in his house. He throws out a lot of stuff in the garbage. He has no room for all the stuff. It's very valuable stuff. He doesn't want it. So aveda midas, so there's no mitzvah of hashavas aveda. So sometimes it's reasonable for a person to say, don't do me any favors, I'd rather die. So really the whole decision is up to the choyla. Again, the choyla has no right to take his own life, but the choyla is a balabas to determine whether you're doing him a favor, whether you're doing him a service or a disservice by extending his life. So it's always, that's a Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's always up to the choyla, but sometimes the choyla has to choose a reasonable choice. Let's say the Magen Avraham in Hilchas Shabbos from Shin Chavtes quotes a Tshuvas HaRadvaz. Let's say a person is 20 years old and he has gangrene in one of his legs. And they say, we have to amputate the leg and we'll put on a plastic leg and you live to the age of 120. You live to Arichas Yami, you'll be able to function like everybody else. And no negative side effects. We've done the surgery thousands of times and it works and there are no hitches. Everything's going to go well. The guy, the 20-year-old person says, he'd rather die now at the age of 20 than live another 100 years. So the Magen Avraham says that that's an, quotes from the Radvad, that's an unreasonable choice. So true, the whole choice is up to the Chayla, but it has to be within reason. If the Chayla chooses an absolutely unreasonable option, he wants to die at the age of 20 rather than having a productive life, live on many, many years, a normal life.
But it's only a matter of increasing percentage that you're living, increasing the chances that you're living. Now you have 5% to increase it to 20%.
What do you mean that? What?
So if you did, if you don't do anything to fix the problem, you have 5% chance to live. But if you do something, maybe you'll have 20% chance.
That's all.
Maybe, I mean, I'm saying like.
No, so then he's not obligated. If everything is iffy, we don't know exactly what the results are going to be. So the Magen Avraham quotes this from the Tshuva Sar Advaz. We have a procedure that we've done many times, and we know that it works, and there are no negative side effects. So that we don't give the patient the choice to say, "I'd rather die." But if we don't know exactly what the percentages are, and there may be negative side effects, so then Rabbi Yankov Emden writes in his sefer Morik Tzia, his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch HaRahayim, that then the patient has a right to say, "Don't do me any favors. I'd rather not live on." Or in the other direction, also Ramosha Feinstein has. Let's say the patient is suffering so much that if you were to take a poll of 1,000 people, 999 out of 1,000 people would say, "Let me die already." And this guy thinks that he thinks that it's a mitzvah to push on, to live on all the time and to keep on suffering. So that's, Ramosha Feinstein says that that's unreasonable. You're not allowed to extend his life. You're not allowed to listen to him. What can be the aver in extending his life? So Ramosha says it's an iser of chavola. He's causing him to suffer longer. Like this, he would have died already, he wouldn't suffer. And because you, the doctors, extend his life, he requests that they should extend his life, so you're causing him to suffer longer than otherwise. So Moshe Feinstein writes, in the two extreme situations, we don't leave it up to the Chayla to choose. That's an unreasonable choice. He chooses to die at the age of 20 in an unreasonable fashion, or he chooses to continue to live on in an absolutely unreasonable fashion. So he says, his choice is an absolutely unreasonable choice. But a lot of times you have situations that are iffy. They have negative side effects and so on. The person is already an older person. He already lived on. And he's falling to pieces as it is. And he can hardly walk. No, can't hear, he can't see. No, shanging up. There was yaitze already. He lived long enough. So if the choice of the chayla is not unreasonable, so then you have to honor the choice of the chayla. So if he says, "I'd rather not live on," so he has no right to commit suicide, but he is the balabas to determine whether you're doing him a favor, you're doing him a service or a disservice by extending his life. That's all based on that Ran. That the Ran said over there, that sometimes it's a mitzvah to pray that a person should die. It's not always a mitzvah to extend life. After the Chazon Ish passed away, so they published a collection of letters of the Chazon Ish. A very fascinating style. Chazon Ish had his own style of Hebrew. An original style of Hebrew, like Rabbi Soloveitchik also had his own style of Hebrew. Not like the Chazon Ish, but not the regular style of Hebrew. So then after the brother-in-law of the Chazon Ish, the Chazon Ish's family, I think there were 12 brothers and sisters. So after the Stipler passed away, Stipler was a brother-in-law, he was married to one of the sisters of the Chazon Ish, so he also published a collection of letters of the Stipler. The Stipler's style was nothing like the Chazon Ish's, a very simple style of Hebrew. So they published a collection of his letters. They have several volumes. So one of the first collection of letters, so they published a letter. Someone asked him, is it always a mitzvah to extend a person's life? So he writes back a fascinating response. He says, when we were growing up as little children, it was ingrained in us that the Jewish position always is that you always push on, you always extend life longer. Then when we grew a little older, we studied Gemara Nedarim, and we came upon this Ran and Daf Mem, that is not always the case. Then we got a little older, we saw in Shulchan Aruch that the Ramah quotes the Ran Mahalocha. So he says, he doesn't write what the answer is, he just says, you see in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch that it's not always a mitzvah to extend life. But that's what Moshe Feinstein says, that's the klal. It all depends on the Chayla. And if we didn't discuss it with the Chayla, so the next of kin have to determine what did they think the Chayla would have wanted. A lot of times that's not too reliable. They had a book review in the New York Times about 7-8 years ago. Someone published a book. He interviewed many people who were holding, who were hovering between life and death. And then the decision was made by the next of kin based on what they think the patient would have wanted. And then the person came back to life. And then in more than 50% of the cases, the patient who came back to life said that they guessed wrong, that they made the wrong choice. He wouldn't have wanted that. In both directions. Sometimes they said, extend his life. Sometimes they said, don't extend his life. And these are, they interviewed people who did survive. And more than 50% of the time, they said that they guessed wrong. So that's always a problem. But that's we have no better way to determine. So the thing is, it all depends on the patient. The patient is a balachayla himself, is a balabas to determine whether he's doing him a service or a disservice by extending his life. Okay, the end. The upshot of the story is we should all be healthy, no one should be sick. And if anyone is sick, we got to try to help them recover. And that's the essence of the mitzvah bikachayla. Okay. Any discussion? Everyone should be well. Okay.
Thank you very much.